This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals, picks the right cards, and somehow ends up in first class for the price of economy? Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like how to get real value from points and not just a tiny reward at checkout, the smartest ways to book flights without playing the guess the cheapest day game, and how to avoid paying for upgrades you won't use. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode. And I'm continuing the Bhutan series for a solo episode on days 4 to 7. And that'll wrap up the main part of my tour. And I'll come to the last 3 days and a summary in the last episode. Welcome to the Winging It Travel Podcast, your weekly ticket to the world, dropping every Monday and hosted by me, James Hammond, proudly part of the Voyascape Network. This is a travel podcast that throws out the itinerary and dives straight into the raw, real, and unpredictable essence of global exploration, chasing moments over milestones, those spontaneous encounters, immersive sounds, and unforgettable stories. Whether I'm hiking up volcanoes in Guatemala, or camping under the stars in British Columbia. I've met incredible people, seen breathtaking places, and collected unforgettable stories. I now get to share them with you alongside some of the most diverse and well-traveled guests from around the world. Expect engaging conversations that bring fresh perspectives and inspiring travel tales. There are also raw, reflective solo episodes where I share personal insights, practical tips, and honest stories from the road. This is a podcast for travelers, dreamers, backpackers, and anyone who's ever thought, "What if I just went for it and traveled?" If you're looking for stories to tell, tips to share, and experiences to inspire, then you're in the right place. There's so much travel content coming your way, it might just spark that trip you've been dreaming about for years. You can find Winging It and more fantastic travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com. The link is in the show notes. Let's go and explore the world. So today, day 4 of my Bhutan tour was up in the morning in Access Suites in Thimphu, a great breakfast. And I got dressed up in a traditional go. Now, a go is a national dress worn by the Bhutanese men, and it's instantly recognizable. It's about a knee-length robe wrapped around the body and folded inward, and then secured at the waist with like a belt called a kera. So then when it's tied properly, it sort of creates like a pouch at the front. So it's quite practical. You can hold your phone and your wallet in there, but no pockets. And then I wore these black socks with my trainers. And normally this is worn on day-to-day life or important occasions. I think for me, because I was going to a festival, which I'll come to in a minute, they want to dress me up in the formal dress, which I was more than happy to do. And it's cool to understand how it feels like to dress like this every day, like my guides do. And this material is hand-woven fabric, and it's got like bold patterns, more like a kilt, if you can imagine those sort of patterns in your mind. So after about 10, 15 minutes, they got me ready. A bit tight around the waist, but that's probably me being a bit too big. And I was off in the van to the festival. This sort of attire is actually normally worn for government offices, work, schools, temples, official events in Bhutan. Sometimes you'll see it just on the street, just day-to-day life. And also you will see the younger generation mostly not wear it. But they can wear what they want day-to-day. But I did see some school children wearing it as well. So I guess on the whole, it is expected that you wear this in society. And I think there's different designs for what status you have in society as well. But I asked the guides this about what they were wearing. And they said it's pretty standard what they're wearing, but they're wearing very different colors as well, which is up to them in terms of what they want to look like. Now, let's get to the main event of this day, and that's the Druk Wangyal Festival. It's one of Bhutan's most visually striking and meaningful celebrations. I got really lucky going in December because this is held at the Do Chela Pass, which is about 3,100 meters up above sea level in December on the same day every year. It was created in 2011 to honor the fourth king. So we now have the fifth king currently in charge. The fourth king is still alive. And of course, he's the father of the fifth king. This festival in its entirety is to celebrate Bhutan's peace, stability, unity, but also, more importantly, the successful military operation that restored peace in southern Bhutan in the early 2000s. The fourth king went off with the army to go and fight. So it's more of a mix of traditional culture, storytelling, masked dancers. The Royal Bhutan Army were there as well, and the other armed forces. And there were a few celebrities in the crowd as well, including one of the fourth king's wives. He has four. One of those was there too. And it's basically performances to showcase Bhutan's modern history. And when I got there, I didn't know what to expect. So we arrived, it's pretty cold, it's pretty high up in altitude. And there's a cafe there if you want to get a coffee just to warm yourself up. And as I was walking down the path in my Go, very colourful, lots of people, lots of locals, and lots of tourists as well who are there in Bhutan. And we're all walking down this amazing path. And you go into this area, which kind of looks out into the mountains, and you have the highest unclimbed mountain in the world in Bhutan. And you can see that in the distance. And the backdrop is sensational. But I wasn't sure what to expect when I arrived to the area. When I got to the area, it was so busy. People were on the floor, sitting in lines, watching the performances. There was, to the left of us, the more expensive seats. I mean, it doesn't cost, but they would be like undercover, proper chairs, etc. They were the officials, the celebrities, the people who are important in society. And in the middle was the stage in front of the iconic 108 Druk Wangyal Chortens, which are the snow-capped peaks and mountains, which you can see on clear days. In December, guaranteed clear days. Most festivals in Bhutan are quite famous for being religious rituals, ancient meanings, but this one was more patriotic and reflective, celebrating Bhutan's journey as a nation. So I got to see that side. But I implore you, when you book your tour to Bhutan, to try and get in a festival if you can. I think they have 12 to 15 major festivals throughout the year. See what you can find. And honestly, you won't regret it. It's full of noise, sound, music, dancing, positivity, happy people, everything. It's such a great experience. I loved being there for a couple of hours, and I got some real cool footage from behind the stage to the front of the stage. I was trying to see as many of the performances as possible. And I thought, you know what? This is Bhutanese culture in a nutshell here. We've got all the locals, all the tourists sitting together, just enjoying the festivities to commemorate Bhutan as a country. So after a couple of hours, we thought it's time to go. We had a bit of a journey east, so we're going to go to the cafe first, where the festival is taking place. And let me tell you, the Americano, top notch. And you can get cakes and sandwiches there too. It's off in the van to our next temple. And this one's called the Chimbilakang Temple, often called the Fertility Temple. Now, when you park up and you walk down towards the temple, you're going to go through some villages in the Punika Valley. They're called Sopsoka and Tiaprongu near Lebesa. Now, these villages will have a lot of penis signs on houses, on the walls, on art, everywhere, because it's leading up to the Fertility Temple, which sits on a small hilltop. So the approach takes you along narrow paths between like rice paddies, traditional Bhutanese homes and prayer flags, great little temples in the middle of the field, sensational views of the valley. And as I keep mentioning, in Bhutan in December, clear skies, so you see as far as the eye can see, and honestly, it's breathtaking. I would say this temple is well visited, but maybe not like the major temples that are visited in Bhutan. A bit more of an experience, kind of slows you down into village life because you have to walk through the villages and see the community working and being together rather than just driving up, parking up and going to a temple. So it's not just a tourist site. The temple is dedicated to Drukpa Khinli. He's the 15th century Buddhist master known as the Divine Madman. And he's famous for his humor and shock to teach Buddhist truths and challenge social norms. So if you're struggling to conceive for children, couples normally go there, and it's known for its fertility blessings, drawing couples from across Bhutan, and it's actually quite serious. I mean, it's got a playful reputation maybe, but ultimately it's a place of faith, protection and compassion, and it's deeply woven into helping women conceive and have children. So it's a serious thing. When the women go there, they have a little ceremony and a ritual. I think they have to go around the temple three times. And then once they do that little ceremony, they go back. And obviously it does work because you have pictures on the wall of people who have conceived since they've been to this temple. So there is some truth to that. And when you get to the temple, you can walk in and see it. Again, no phones or cameras allowed in temples in Bhutan. And the view, because it's on top of a hill, I mean, amazing looking down the valley in Punika. You really get to see what Punika is about from this temple in terms of the nature. Sensational. It follows the river all the way through. And then Punika Valley, as we stand here at Chimbilakang, the altitude is lower. It's a little bit warmer, so that makes a difference from being up in the hills in Bhutan. So my guide, Ratu, gave me a rundown of all the history and the information about Chimbilakang. I'm not going to do it justice, so you have to go there and get the lowdown from your own guide. Then we walked back to the van, to head to our hotel in the Punakha Hills called Dharma City Hotel. It's getting quite late at this point. This hotel is situated right on top of the hill overlooking the Punakha Zong, and we arrived just at dusk for a tea and a sit down and a biscuit and overlooking the Punakha Zong, which changes from day to night to the most sensational view. I mean, honestly, it's absolutely incredible. The lights come on and it just flashes up in the valley beneath you. That is well worth the sunset when you get there, but also for sunrise, which we'll come to in a second. Dharma City Hotel, great food. I mean, all the hotels and restaurants serve great Bhutanese food. And we had amazing momos and rice and curry and chili cheese, the usual Bhutanese cuisine. Quite cold up here though, compared to where we were earlier. So I got into my cabin, which was a nice little wooden cabin just perched on the hill. And my door opened up into the view of the valley. And I got my heaters on and got snuggly in bed. So day five, got up in the morning pretty early because I got to bed quite early actually, and walked straight out of my doors to the cabin onto my little balcony. Quite cold, but the misty views that goes across the valley sort of halfway up. So the Punakha Zong is poking above it and obviously beneath it, but this cloud is just in the middle of the valley. Honestly, wow, what a great view for a coffee. Walked up to the restaurant area, grabbed a coffee and breakfast. A great breakfast, and the hotel staff there at Dharma City are so nice. They give you a WhatsApp number. Any problems, you can message them in case you have any needs. They gave me an extra blanket and an extra heater for my room. Really appreciated it. And it's a top place to stay if you go to Punakha. Next up is the Khamsun Yulay Namgyel Chortan Buddhist Temple. We're going to walk through some more traditional villages, and this time it's a bit more traditional. And what I mean by that is we walk through the village, glorious day, you know, mild, like 11, 12, 13 degrees. And we see some villagers working in the farms, and they're separating grain from the hay using quite old school equipment and techniques. Looked quite hard work in the sun. And we got to speak to them to ask them how they do it and watch them. And it really was quite interesting to see how the local villagers live day to day and work day to day. On the trail, you're going to see some older villagers who are selling like dates and fruits and nuts. They collect money for their own village to build temples and stuff. And they're normally ex-military or ex-army who fought in the war. And we met some of those guys. I bought some bananas off one guy. I think he charged me like 100 rupees, which is like, what, £2 to £3 in English money for this huge bunch of bananas. I mean, there were too much of them. So I gave him half back and I shared out the rest with my group. So Khamsun Yulay was constructed in the late 1990s by Her Majesty the Queen Mother Ashi Sherring Yangden Wangchuk, who is also the mother of the current king. Now, unlike most Bhutanese temples, it was built to promote peace, stability and harmony rather than commemorate a historical event. So this one's dedicated to protecting Bhutan from negative energies and natural disasters. And it's got intricate mandalas, protected deities and symbolic artwork based on all four levels of the temple, which I'll come to in a second. The hike up was about 45 minutes. In the altitude, yeah, it's a fair whack, but not too bad. Steps and a clean trail all the way up. What was really cool actually going up is there's a nice little sit-down area by this huge bell which goes round and round in a circle. And in the distance, we could hear people cheering. And they're playing like darts. And it's not the traditional darts that you think of where you just throw like, I don't know, from 8 feet away. These guys are throwing darts from like 100 feet away, and bigger targets, bigger darts. But obviously if you get it onto the board or maybe into the middle, they're cheering and they're drinking at the same time. So that's quite cool to see that in the distance and here. Obviously it's a day off for those guys. And let's describe the temple because this is quite unique, this one. It's very modern. I really like the inside. And at the top, you can get even better views of the valley. But the ground floor is focusing on protection and removal of obstacles and negative forces. The second floor, mandalas, which is like the Tibetan art form and representing a spiritual balance and safeguarding the peace and harmony of the country. The third floor symbolizes wisdom and compassion. And the top level is home to the Serene Buddha, opening out to the panoramic views that reflect clarity, calm and spiritual completion. And let me tell you, when you get up to the top floor and you look straight ahead, 360 degree views as well. My word, great views up there. This temple definitely reminded me of Japan. It had that sort of feel. So if you go to Japan and just walk amongst the Japanese gardens and a temple, it has that sort of feel. Very serene, peaceful, prayer flags sort of flickering in the wind. And I really enjoyed my time there. It's actually pretty cool to see up the top as well of the whole area. So we headed back down to the van for lunch on the river. by the Punukazong, and the water was like the water you get here in Canada, a sort of glacier like colour, blue, very clear, very clean. And we had lunch by a beach, believe it or not, on the river. Couldn't believe it. A bit of wind, but the Punukazong was in the distance. Now let's get to visiting the Punukazong, because this was one of my top things to see and do in Bhutan. So it stands at the meeting point of the Mo Chu and Pho Chu rivers, where the valley sort of narrows. And it's built in 1637 and once served as Bhutan's capital. And it does remain one of the most important structures in the country's history to the modern day. So you have to go and visit. Not just a fortress, it's a spiritual center. So you're going to see monks walking around. They live there during the year. And the courtyards, as you walk around, awesome architecture, colors. And it's just really cool to see monks walking around as you check out the temples as well. The funniest thing in the temple is a rooster. So it walks around. And the story goes that back in the day, it was going to be slaughtered to eat. But there was a fundraising campaign to keep it. So as you walk in, you're going to see this one rooster that's like dancing around the courtyards. And he wanted to go in to this one door. It's a gold door that no one can go in, only the monks. And just sat there waiting to be let in. And sat there for 10, 15 minutes watching this rooster most of the time. Yeah, but also trying to admire the views of the whole structure. The scale is breathtaking. It's like whitewashed walls. There's a tree in there. It looks like Bodh Gaya in India. So like an enlightenment tree, intricate woodwork, traditional architecture, and deeply symbolic. And at certain times of the year, it becomes a place of national gathering, hosting festivals, royal events, and moments that have shaped the history and identity of Bhutan. And this is where the current king and queen got married in 2011. So it's that important. That was a great little visit. And then after that, I'm heading to my next thing I want to really do in Bhutan, and that's a homestay. So we picked up Amma Om from the car park, actually, near the Zong. And we drove up to our homestay in the hills. Bit of a drive up. The road's not great. The things with homestays is I love doing them in different countries to understand the local people and how they live. So Amma Om's homestay was almost at the top of my list of things to see and do. A super lovely lady, like the best. So kind, so gentle. Welcomed us into her home. Fed us straight away with momos, coffee, Bhutanese pizza. It's good, trust me. And we got to have a chat and also do some activities. Now, I want to refer you back to Amma Om's interview in the previous episode. I do a little intro there explaining how it went. And also she explains what goes on at the homestay. So I'm not going to spend too much on this point, but more of a home feel here. I got to see the guides in casual clothing. So mostly they're in goes, but in this setting, they got dressed into standard clothing they just lounge about in. That's quite cool to see. I got to milk a cow, churn the milk into butter and cheese, helped with the cooking, so I chopped some veg and helped Amma Om in the kitchen. And we're getting fed all the time from start to finish when we're there. And the Bhutanese pizza, let me tell you, it's good. You got to try it. It's not better than the Italian pizza, but my word, awesome. And a really nice sleep, so peaceful, in the house, in the middle of a farm field. Brilliant. So obviously day six, next morning, we're up early for breakfast, coffee. She gives us turnip, avocado, eggs, as much tea as you want. And she explained much of her family history to us when we were leaving. And she's got a real interest in history. Her brother is known to the king. He's a famous artist. And we just got to see all these pictures on these walls of going back five, six generations. Absolutely incredible. You have to stay at Amma Om's homestay when you go to Bhutan, because she is the most charming lady. Again, doesn't speak that much English, barely any actually. So if you learn a bit of Bhutanese, that would help. But don't worry, your guides and other people will translate for you if you want to have a conversation. And she really is that mumsy grandma feel. So nice. Anyway, we packed up, headed out of the homestay and went to Bhutan's second longest suspension bridge called the Punuka Suspension Bridge. That stretches across the Mo Chu River, linking nearby villages with the Zong. So it's draped in prayer flags. It's pretty high up. I mean, it's going to be about 100 feet above the river. A classic bridge, sort of sway side to side. It's about 160 to 180 meters and about 1 to 2 meters wide. So people can go back and forth next to each other. Dramatic views as you cross. Awesome. That was great to see early doors. And then we headed up to the Sanchen Dorji Lendrup Nunnery. Again, I'm going to refer you back to a couple of episodes ago when I interviewed a nun from this nunnery. She explains what happens at this nunnery and what their day-to-day is like and what the aim of the whole place is. But when we got there, again, on top of a hill, very clean, that serene music is getting played. You hear them practicing their rituals in the temple. You can't go in the temple, but you can stay outside and see into the temple. The view is incredible. Again, I thought it's very important to get an interview, not only with a male monk, but also a female monk, to get both sides of the story. After that was lunch near the Chimilakang temple in that little village that we walked through. More of an Indian style this time. A nice change, actually. I love Indian food. And after lunch, it's a bit of a trek in the van, actually. We headed east to the Pobjika Valley. Now, this place is often called the Switzerland of Bhutan. And weirdly, I didn't know that when I was arriving. So when I was walking down the trail, we parked up, got out, and walked down about 30 minutes. And as you approach the valleys, it looks like Switzerland. And I said, oh, this looks like Switzerland. And Ratu was like, yeah, it's known as Switzerland of Bhutan. Because it's got like an open glacial valley, rolling green fields, crisp mountain air, very, very cold, like blisteringly cold, actually. And it has what's super cool, endangered black-necked cranes, and they migrate there from Tibet every year. The landscape is completely different to anywhere else in the country that I've seen. It's a huge, huge valley, U-shaped valley, right in the middle of Bhutan, open meadows, quiet rural life, and you can stay there too. And unlike most valleys, it's quite broad and flat. So when you see the birds flying across, you can really see them in the distance. It's not too hard to spot. Bit of an alpine feel, actually. Yeah, loved it. And when we're walking down, you've got those like traditional farmhouses. I'm like, this is exactly like Switzerland. It's pretty, pretty cool. So one of the coldest valleys in Bhutan. It's a protected conservation area. We're next to a group of, I think they're Chinese tourists, probably about 20 of them, actually. And their guides went down to the village to go and get some hot coffee for them because it's that cold. And overlooking the valley is Gangtay Monastery. That's where we're heading to next to stay for the night. And yeah, that ends with an overnight stay there. It's a 17th century monastery perched high above the valley. All the meals are prepared by the monks. And we settle in for a freezing but unforgettable night surrounded by silence, prayer, the views. And it's perched quite high up in the valley. Monks everywhere here. It's pretty cool. If you really want to imagine what Bhutan is like, you're probably thinking temples, prayer flags, monks. This place has it all. What a place. But very, very cold. Didn't sleep too well this night. Bit higher up in altitude. Very cold. Had the heater on the go, but just couldn't get comfortable. And then next morning, we had breakfast, which was cooked by the monks. And I got to learn a little bit more about the Tibetan Buddhism that they preach there. And interestingly, what was really, really cool is we went to the actual proper monastery on site. And all the monks were in there for the last ceremony of the year. And we got to go in. It's incredible. The sounds, the noise, the drum, the music is actually quite overwhelming. I couldn't really get a grasp on what's happening. And there wasn't many tourists there, like maybe a couple of people, but they're so welcoming and let us in. And we could sit in there and just listen and watch. And they're all sat in a square in lines. They all got the books out. They're all singing in time. What an experience. And it kind of really, I felt, signed off on my busiest part of my tour. Because during breakfast, just before this, I cancelled the hike I was going to do in the Ha Mountains because it's too cold. I was going to be camping in tents at -3 and -4 degrees. I didn't think I could do it. Too high in altitude. I had a bit of a cold, just not warm enough for me. So after the demonstration, got some last photos, monks hanging out. Such a cool photo to get. Got back in the van and it's the long, long journey to Thimphu. And essentially what happened was we got to Thimphu really late, checked into a hotel, and that was it for my guides. But I'll come to more on this in the next episode to finish the Bhutan series. But that's the end of day 7. And at this point, I really did know that the main bulk of Bhutan is done as per the itinerary. And I was free to explore for 3 days before I flew back to Bangkok. So that's the bulk of the tour completed for the sub episode. If you've got any questions, let me know. I'll answer them. You can send me an email at jameshammondtravel@gmail.com. Or send me a message on Instagram and I'll get back to you with any questions or any comments you have. Add to that, please rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Give 5 stars. Really appreciate that. A written review is also pretty cool. If you have time, and you can head to buymeacoffee.com/wingin it if you want to donate $5 to the production costs of this podcast. Thanks for tuning in and I'll see you in the next episode. And that's it for this episode on Winging It. I hope you took something from this episode, whether it sparked a new idea, offered a different perspective, or simply let you feel part of the journey. If you enjoyed it, leaving a quick rating or review on your podcast app really helps the show reach new listeners. And if you know someone who might connect with this episode, share it by word of mouth or social media. It makes a huge difference. Head to voyescape.com for more amazing travel podcasts as well. And thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode. Until then, keep winging it.
Hey guys, Aaron Miller here from Armchair Explorer, and I just wanted to let you know that our new series is out now. We've got kite skiing across Antarctica, Aboriginal storytellers, and the craziest whitewater race in the world. We're going on a bucket list hike across Italy. We're going to the fjords of Norway in search of the Northern Lights and lots, lots more. Our goal is to take you on the trip of a lifetime every single week. You can find Armchair Explorer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now, and at voyescape.com.
The New York Times named the Frommer's Travel Podcast one of the 13 best for travel. Why did they like it? Well, they said, and I quote, "With charisma and candor, Pauline Frommer discusses the charms and ongoing transformations of places near and far, whether on the islands of Hawaii or on safari in Tanzania." Pretty nice, huh? We post new podcasts weekly, talking about travel from every angle. I hope you'll tune in.